Good morning, I'm Tommy Howe, and welcome to another edition of Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9, a weekly natural science and environmental affairs program for the listeners of FM 94.9 and San Diego and all of Southern California, from the beaches to the mountains to the deserts. This is Tree Huggers International. Be careful and use this show with caution, because you might just learn something. While we talk a lot about conservation and management issues on this program, sometimes to a fault, I don't think we talk often enough about simply strapping on a good pair of boots and heading into the great outdoors. And if there's one state which is almost genetically designed to offer a great variety of climates within only a few hours' drive, California is certainly it. There's a lot of great outdoor books and guidebooks on the shelf. We had George Werthner on the show recently talking about his series of wilderness books. And one of the best series of books for local hikes in Southern California is Jerry Shadd's A Foot and a Field series. Jerry has a knack for finding interesting, challenging, fun, sometimes exhausting places to go, which may only be a stone's throw away from your backyard. While A Foot in a Field in San Diego may be the definitive title in his series, Jerry's in the finishing stages of producing a revised version of his Los Angeles County edition of A Foot in a Field, due to hit stores later this year. Jerry Shadd is also an astronomer and a fan of the nighttime sky. He's been having astronomical photographs published in journals ever since he was a kid. He's an astronomy and physical sciences professor at Mesa College, where he serves as the chair of the school's physical sciences department. You may have caught Jerry on TV a couple of years ago on KPBS for the TV version of A Foot in a Field in San Diego County, as well as the KPBS documentary, The San Diego Night Sky. Jerry's written a number of publications about bicycling and California's outdoors, as well as a textbook for physical science courses, and he continues to pen the Romarama column in the San Diego Reader, and he's coming up on his 800th column for the San Diego Reader. A busy guy, but no stranger to Tree Huggers International here at FM 94.9. Jerry made an appearance on the program last year, and we're very happy to have our friend Jerry Shadd joining us again today on Tree Huggers International. Jerry, welcome back. Good to see you.
Glad to be back.
The last time I saw you, I was more or less crashing one of your astronomy labs off of the Sunrise Highway in the Cleveland National Forest last fall. And I saw some amazing things in the sky I'd never seen before. And I want to talk about the nighttime sky this time of year. But let's talk a little bit about your revised edition of A Foot in a Field in Los Angeles County. Mm-hmm. You've already done revised editions of your San Diego and Orange County editions, as well as your overall Southern California primer book.
Yes, so the San Diego book is on the fourth edition. Orange is on the third. L.A. will soon be on the third edition with this latest revision.
Can you talk about any major changes or new inclusions in the revised L.A. book?
Well, sure. Like my other books on San Diego and Orange County, I have included a lot of new open space preserves that are, in the case of L.A., operated by Los Angeles County. And oftentimes these are places that were former private ranches, for example, the Amundsen Ranch on the west rim of the San Fernando Valley in the Simi Hills. That's a fantastic, kind of early California landscape, and a big block of land was purchased as parkland and now open as the long-winded name Upper Las Virgenes Canyon Open Space Preserve.
Right. Does that have some of those oak grottos and oak woodlands?
It has the rolling hills, the valley oaks. We don't quite get valley oaks here in San Diego, not quite the range for it, but, the very statuesque twisted oaks amid the rolling meadows. And down in the canyons themselves, richly wooded with sycamores and willows and live oak trees and things like that.
Is Los Angeles County really the border of that type of California habitat?
I would say the classic, yes, because the valley oak goes all the way from Northern California down to approximately northern L.A. County and Ventura County. And beyond that, you do get oaks, the coast live oaks and other types of oaks, and they don't have quite the same statuesque look that you may have seen in movies a lot. And, of course, a lot of these ranches that I mentioned that are being transformed to parkland, they were former movie sets and, TV sets.
Cheeseboro Canyon is another really good example
right.
of that.
Exactly.
Springtime is a great time to be there, but I tell you, this time of year, it's just a little too warm.
Right, and that's so characteristic of inland Southern California. It's a mistake to think that summer equals hiking. The place to go in the summertime is high enough where it's cool, in the mountains or low enough near the coast where you get a coastal breeze.
Well, and I wanted to ask about the San Gabriel Mountains. Some of my favorite trails in all of Southern California are there. What are some of the highlighted trails in those mountains which appear in the new version of your book?
There isn't too much new in the San Gabriel Mountains because basically what the Forest Service has done up there is that they have not been able to maintain all of their trails. And those that are maintained are typically maintained by volunteers. And those are some of the best trails. Some of the best trails are either in the high country along Angeles Crest Highway, or they're down close to the cities such as Pasadena and Altadena and Sierra Madre and places like that. And it's amazing how, you know, you can leave the edge of the city. Here you have, you know, miles and miles and miles of urban landscape and suburbia. And all of a sudden, the Angeles National Forest begins, and you're up into the hills, and you go up in some of these trails. You get into these canyons where you would swear that you're, you know, 100 miles away from any major city until you top out at a ridge, and you look down, and you see, oh, my God, you know, there's 10 million people down there.
That whole front range of the San Gabriels is so dry and so different from the rest of the range.
Well, yes and no. See, the thing is, you get the wrong impression down in San Gabriel Valley because you're looking at the sun-facing slopes, the south-facing slopes, and they're the ones that are coated with chaparral. But all you have to do is get into the canyons where the water's coming down. Incidentally, there are some very interesting waterfalls all through there in the major watercourses. Or you go up and over the top and down into the next, you know, toward the high country, there are canyons that loop back in there. And they're deeply shaded and wooded and completely unlike what you would guess seeing the mountains from San Gabriel Valley or urban Los Angeles.
Some of the views of canyons and forests and drainages from the higher elevations of the San Gabriels are really extraordinary. And you would think you're in the Sierras in some places. I was up on Mount Waterman not long ago, and the views from up there are just extraordinary.
Right.
Mount Lowe, Mount San Gabriel, that whole cluster, Mount Wilson are just so steep.
From a geologic point of view, one geologist said that the San Gabriels are like a flake on the edge of a tectonic plate that's been kicked around for hundreds of millions of years. And they're experiencing some of the most rapid uplift of any mountain range in the world. They're also eroding away about as fast as any mountain range in the world. Therefore, if you go there, when you approach a lot of these hikes, you're going to go by debris basins, these big pits scooped out to catch all the slurry that comes down from the front face of the mountain there. You mentioned the front range in the major storms, which we seldom have, but whenever we have them, you know, mudslides are really common there. John Muir commented about a trip up Eaton Canyon he took. Said, the San Gabriels are the most rigidly inaccessible mountain range I've ever been in, you know. Not exactly sheer granite faces, but so steep and so broken and so covered with, you know, almost impenetrable chaparral.
And they do seem to be crumbling. The Devil's Backbone Trail up to Mount Baldy is just severe. You come back, and I swear you've got more dust on you than if you went out into the desert.
Yeah.
So what are some of your favorite beach-to-canyon trails in L.A. County, coming back down to sea level? Zuma Canyon, place like that?
I was just thinking of exactly that. Yeah. I think that's the granddaddy of them all in terms of canyons with a wilderness character in Santa Monica's. There's a lot of great canyons, Malibu Canyon, for example. And there's a roadway going right up the thing. Mm-hmm. Topanga Canyon has mostly a roadway going through it, so... But yeah, Zuma Canyon is a wonderful wilderness place, and you can kind of skip and hop on the rocks and go quite a ways up there.
And some of the best hiking in L.A. County, I think, is also found in the Santa Monicas with those trailheads around Temescal Canyon and Will Rogers State Park.
Right. Right next to Pacific Palisades and Santa Monica, very, very popular trails. The equivalent of our Coles Mountain, you know, just you look at the trails and it's like a stream of ants going up the trail.
In fact, I think you wrote about seeing a storm. It was a wintertime storm. Mm-hmm. And was it in that area? Was it in Pacific Palisades?
It was. It was the Temescal Canyon trail that leads into there. Yeah, it was, you know, right on the ridge there, and a big thunderhead cloud was passing over and dumped some rain, and the sun was on the other side over the Pacific, and so the rainbow appeared. You tend to see rainbows more often in the winter, not only because of the rain, but also because of the sun angle. So if you're having a thunderstorm in the middle of summer in the daytime, where's your rainbow? It's going to be below the horizon, practically straight down. Like when you water a lawn and you see that, you know, with a spray and the sun is high, you get a circle of rainbow below the horizon, right down at your feet.
But because the position of the sun in the wintertime sky...
Wintertime sun is never very high.
The mountains just north of Valencia on the way to the Grapevine and Fort Tejon and Gorman, that strikes me as some of the most rugged terrain in all of Southern California. It seems to be a little inhospitable, but once you get up around Fraser Park, there's some really lovely areas. But are there any good trails or hikes in your book, like around Pyramid Lake or Castaic?
Yes. Well, I would say the best one is the hike through Piru Gorge, Piru Canyon, which is definitely a wilderness hike. The stream runs, you know, much of the year, but it's nice. Well, you don't want to have too much water, but you don't want to have, you know, hardly any at all. But a springtime hike is just wonderful. That's not something to be taken lightly. You know, the way it is now, the access is difficult on both ends. It's probably a two-day backpack, and that one's great. You mentioned a lot of that area on your way up to Fraser Park and so forth. On the right, that's a section of the Angeles National Forest that, unfortunately, the Forest Service has kind of abandoned a lot of the recreational facilities. I mean, last time I went through there, campgrounds were closed, left to revegetate. Not everything, but quite a bit was. Trails are being abandoned, and there just isn't enough, you know, federal money to cover it, despite the fact that the users have to pay a $5 a day fee called the Adventure Pass.
Well, it can be an adventure depending on where you wind up going, I suppose, in the National Forest. Yeah. What are some of the strangest places you've been to which merit a listing in A Foot in the Field in Los Angeles County? And I'm guessing Devil's Punch Bowl might be one of them.
I love that place because I like geological chaos. That's kind of a section of the northern San Gabriels bordering the Mojave Desert that's caught between two faults. And everything is just sort of thrust up like crazy.
We know there's some really great forest and mountaintop hikes where you're really into conifers and the evergreens in L.A. County, but are there any genuine desert trails like around Lancaster or Palmdale that appear in your book?
I tend to exclude that area because it really isn't all that scenic, and not that many people go out there. Perhaps it's undeserved. I know there's some new open space areas around the Lancaster area up into the dry hills there. In the interest of keeping the book to a manageable size, the new edition has 200 hikes in it. I pretty much focused on places that were easy to get to for the bulk of the population of Los Angeles.
And I guess you would tell someone in L.A., just go to Joshua Tree or Mojave or come down to Borrego and come down around here.
Sure, yeah. Actually, that western Mojave desert there is, that was my first exposure to the desert many years ago when I was a kid. In the summertime, we drove through there, and I couldn't understand what the appeal of the desert was. You know. But later on, I got exposed to Anza-Borrego Desert and Joshua Tree and those places, particularly when I moved down to Southern California. And I have a completely different view about the desert now.
There are some areas that adjoin L.A. County, for example, Ice House Canyon or Cucamonga Peak or up in that Mojave area like Red Rock Canyon State Park. Do any of those wind up in the book?
Yes, the ones that are immediately on the L.A. County line. For example, Piru Gorge, I mentioned, is mostly in Ventura County, but partly in L.A. County. The Cucamonga area, Baldy, is L.A. and then San Bernardino County line. So because the trailheads are common for trails that go into one county and the other, I included everything.
What are some of your favorite places and favorite hikes in your book?
I love Baldy. A few years ago, I did the Mount Baldy to the top running race, too, which takes place around Labor Day. So,
okay, just so everybody knows, that's not exactly a walk in the park. That's heavy-duty, Jerry.
What is that? About 4,000 feet of elevation gain, I think. And that was the last time I did anything extremely challenging like that at my age. So I'm nearly 60, but 4 years ago.
Because you're starting at about 6,000 feet there.
Start at 6, you end up at 10.
I was nearly decapitated by a sailplane once on top of Baldy, which is not unusual. The area around Mount Baden-Powell has been accessible for a while, but the area further west has not been accessible.
You're
because
you're talking about the closure of Angeles Crest Highway, right?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, but sometime, I think in June, the Angeles Crest Highway was reopened.
Yeah.
It had been closed for years due to storm damage. Parts of Highway 39 going up into Crystal Lake, I keep checking, there it's still closed, but it will open eventually. And there is talk of extending Highway 39 all the way to Angeles Crest Highway, which has been closed for decades. I don't know if they'll ever get around to that.
Now, Route 39 is the road that intersects the Angeles Crest. It's right around Mount Islip, correct?
Right. At the top, there's a place called Islip Saddle, below Islip Peak. And that's kind of a sort of a major crossroads for other reasons, trailhead and so forth. The other end of the 39 down through the gorge there goes down to Azusa, San Gabriel Canyon.
What's some of the most surprising wildlife you've seen on the trails in Los Angeles County?
absolutely the most surprising thing was on a traverse between Iron Mountain and Old Baldy, or Mount San Antonio. It's the most difficult trip in the LA book, so-called five-star or extremely strenuous. There's a saddle there where apparently it's a kind of a major migration route for bighorn sheep, Nelson bighorn sheep. And I saw, when I passed through there, this herd of about 20 bighorn sheep. I mean, you first recognized by clouds of dust, you know. They saw us coming. There's hardly ever any hikers along this route. These bighorn sheep just went right up and over the pass, you know, kicking up dust as they went, some of them with full curl horns. And then you turn around in the other direction, okay? You turn around 180 degrees over to the right, and there is downtown LA, you know, and the whole city. That's the most remarkable thing. Well, I guess the second most remarkable is seeing a mountain lion in a campground in Orange County. This one behaved correctly. It looked at us, turned around, and took off.
So it was
we didn't even have to make ourselves look big.
Right. It was still afraid of humans, and it got the message right away. If you're just joining us, this is Tree Huggers International on KBZT, FM 94.9. I'm Tommy Helm, and joining us today is author Jerry Shadd, best known for his A Foot in a Field series, particularly A Foot in a Field in San Diego. We're talking about his A Foot in a Field in Los Angeles County book. The third edition of that book is coming out soon. Jerry is also a professor at Mesa College and the chair of the school's physical sciences department and a noted astronomical photographer. We've been talking about the newly revised version of A Foot in a Field in Los Angeles County being published by Berkeley-based Wilderness Press, but I wanted to change gears and talk about the night sky in San Diego and around Southern California. And since we are talking about the outdoors, where are some good places to go camp this time of year and good places to camp where you can see the nighttime sky reasonably unencumbered by light pollution?
The other thing you have to consider is you want to find a site that has a reasonably open sky and not too forested. There are campgrounds up at Palomar Mountain, for example, Observatory Campground, Fry Creek Campground. Well, there's some interference with trees there, but on Mount Laguna in particular, there's Laguna Campground, and at night you can walk out to the clearing there, part of the upper Laguna Meadow, has plenty of unobstructed skies, you might say, from there. Personally, what I like to do for stargazing in the summertime is go out to Anza Borrego. And I know it sounds crazy, but, get out there at 5, 6 in the afternoon, camp at the foot of the mountains. The mountains are rising to the west, so the sun sets effectively in these places at about 6 in the evening. And it's warm, you know, maybe it's 95 degrees, maybe it's 90 degrees, but you can sleep out overnight with basically nothing on you. Maybe a sheet is all that you need, and the starry sky is overhead, and nobody else is out there.
Now, this is that one campsite, like around Indian Head
Peak? Places like,
Or like Palm Canyon? Or
you could go to Palm Canyon. There would be some activity out there. That's the park's most popular campground. I'm mainly referring to southern Anza Borrego, places like Indian Gorge and Mountain Palm Springs and Bow Willow and those places. There's not too much vegetation. The hills are not too high, so you get pretty much a panorama of the whole sky. And then in the morning, you know, you don't stick around too long because the temperature's headed up toward 110. When it comes to sky conditions, Mount Laguna is the absolute best place in San Diego County. And over in the desert, some spots might be just a slight bit darker, particularly toward the west. But the problem is that, you know, we have cities completely surrounding the dark sky areas in San Diego County, including Mexicali. You know, that place is a population is well over a million, and they are electrifying the place, you know, putting up streetlights like they never had 10 years ago. So it has its own dome of light. Even Coachella Valley, Palm Springs is getting to be quite a dome of light in the north. If anyone wants to go farther afield for dark skies, the eastern Mojave Desert is excellent. You get some light in one direction from Las Vegas, and that's about it.
So what are some of the constellations to look for? Or are there patterns in the sky of stars that can lead you to seeing larger constellations? And I know, obviously, we're on the radio here, so you can't really point to a diagram. But are there a couple of things
Since
you might
want to
look for?
Since we're on the radio, I'm going to make it simple.
All right.
And the greatest thing about the summer sky, and it has to be a moonless night where the moon is not up, but the Milky Way. You know, this is the brightest portion of the Milky Way, so-called summer Milky Way, visible on summer evenings, moonless nights. And you see this river of stars, particularly in, you know, July, August, going right across the top of the sky, down to the south, into the direction of a constellation called Sagittarius, the Archer. And in that direction is the center of the Milky Way galaxy, which we don't see because it's hidden behind, you know, a lot of dust. But you do see a greater concentration of millions and millions of stars, which should the eye look like sort of an irregular blur. So it's magnificent. It almost seems like you're inside. Well, you are inside the galaxy looking out, but it almost seems as if you're at the edge of the galaxy looking at, you know, the central core and then the feathery, less bright areas away from that.
We are not in the middle of the galaxy. We're actually on the end of one of the arms of the galaxy.
Right. It has a pinwheel pattern, and we are on the edge of one of many spiral arms, and we are about two-thirds of the way out from the center to the rim.
So as a result, we get a pretty good view.
We get a good view, and it's a good thing we're not closer into the center because there would be more dust we'd be embedded in. Mm. Already as it is, you know, you look at that Milky Way, and it's very patchy. It isn't uniform because of that dust, clumps of dust here and there. And when I speak of dust, I mean there might be, you know, one particle, tiny microscopic particle per cubic centimeter or a cubic more than that. But, I mean, it's very thinly distributed dust. But you look through thousands of light years of such obstructions, and it basically absorbs light trying to come through from behind.
What are some good books or resources someone might want to use if they were going to go and try and find some of these constellations that they went out camping one night? Can you recommend any?
Yeah, what I always recommend is a device called a planisphere or a star wheel. It's a, you know, a movable wheel within a frame that encompasses the whole sky. Date and time. You match up date and time. Make sure that you account for daylight savings time. You're an hour off the standard time there. And then you just get, you know, kind of a sketch map of all the constellations in the sky. You can hold it overhead and match what you see in the sky with what's on the map. And, of course, there's plenty of internet resources for individual star maps you can print out. Plenty of books available in bookstores.
And here we were talking about Anza Borrego Desert State Park, which is just an amazing place. It's been around for 75 years, or rather established as a state park back in 1933. And, of course, the state, regrettably, is looking to potentially close down 80% of our state parks. On this program, we've had an almost myopic hysteria over it, but it's something that I'm personally very concerned about. And, obviously, it's almost impossible to imagine a place like Anza Borrego being inaccessible, since those parks are really designed to be accessible in the first place in some ways.
As a matter of fact, the major arterial highways go through these parks, so, you know, you're not going to put up a barricade and block traffic.
People live there.
A lot of these parks have in-holdings. Take Anza Borrego. Borrego Springs is a massive in-holding, meaning private land within the park, surrounded by parkland, 1,000 square miles of parkland. So it is impossible, practically impossible, to close Anza Borrego.
I wanted to talk to you also about some new multi-use paths being developed at Balboa Park right now, and you're playing a major role in that.
Yes, I'm on a planning committee for the Balboa Park Trails Committee. So we're getting funding from San Diego Foundation, San Diego Track Club, other groups like that, to put together a assigned system of trails in Balboa Park. We already have two gateways in place. The gateways are the equivalent of trailheads. Mm-hmm. Now, you live close to one of them yourself, 6th and Upas,
right,
is the gateway there. Most of the trails are already in place. They can include portions of sidewalks and canyon paths. And, you know, Balboa Park is something like 2 square miles worth. There are plenty of places to walk. Each gateway, there's going to be 5 of them eventually. We only have 6 in the Upas, Morley Field now. Golden Hills next. It's going to be Park Administration Building, Marston Point. These are the future gateways, the last couple I mentioned. There's going to be a total of about 17, 18 marked trails. Signage is very innovative, color-coded.
Yeah, I've seen the signs.
Yeah,
great.
Shapes have to do with, you know, the difficulty. Background color has to do with the gateways. So, yeah, you're seeing these signs, little signs, you know, 5x5 signs popping up all over the park. They've proven to be quite popular. In conjunction with this project, or actually following it, is the fact that the park has made great strides in cleaning up the formerly abandoned, or I should say, not well-maintained sections of the park. For example, along 163, it's friendly now for dog walkers and hikers, walkers, etc.
Is there anything new along those trails that someone might see?
No, the trails are the same. Sometimes it involves some improvement of the trail surface. For example, there's a trail that, it's called the Bridle Trail. DLE, having to do with the horses used to use these trails. And there used to be a very steep section that goes up to Juniper and Six, basically. They're building a really rustic, beautiful staircase out of native stone there. Oh. Well, granite stone from, I think, somewhere in San Diego County.
And you, in part, became involved in this because you moved back to downtown a couple of years ago.
I moved downtown from the East County suburbs. I lived in East County for 35 years. The main reason is that it was close to the mountains, you know, and for some other reasons. But I found out that where I live in downtown at Cortez Hill, it's only 7 minutes longer to get to the backcountry than where I used to live. And now I use my car half as much. So it's downtown San Diego is enormously walkable, and there's a ton of things to do down there.
Yeah,
including Balboa Park, which is the edge of which is, well, I jog a lot, so it's a three-minute jog to the southwest corner of Balboa Park. Multiple dwelling buildings make a lot of sense. My particular building has 199 units in it and on half a block, you know. And I love the vertical living. Very enjoyable, very comfortable place. Not a lot of room, but I don't have a lot of stuff. As I say, I use my car about half as much as I used to.
Jerry, your website is www.skyphoto.com. Folks can learn more about you there and also see a lot of your astronomical photographs.
Mm-hmm.
Skyphoto.com. When's school starting again?
Late August.
Take the students out to the usual places to see the heavens?
Very much looking forward to, again, teaching Astronomy 109, practice at observing. That's where we get out into the backcountry at night, sometimes overnight, the thing that you experienced at Sunrise Highway.
That was great, by the way. That was really amazing. And that laser pointer you had was this close to being a lightsaber. Mm. I don't know if you could see it from the moon, but I certainly got the impression if you were in an airplane.
Yeah, that's one of the nicest tools now that astronomy teachers have is a green laser pointer.
Jerry, great having you back on the program. Very, very nice to see you. A Foot in a Field in Los Angeles County will be in bookstores later on this year. Keep an eye out for it. Stay in touch, Jerry. We will talk to you next time.
I will, Tommy. It's been great being here.
That's going to wrap things up for this week's edition of Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9. Many thanks again to Jerry Shadd for stopping by and joining us again. Great seeing Jerry once again and having him on the program talking about some trails around Los Angeles County and Southern California. Keep an eye out. That new edition of A Foot in a Field in Los Angeles County will be out later on this year. In fact, we'll put it up on the website once that book hits bookstores. You can go to Jerry's website for more information, skyphoto.com. That's www.skyphoto.com. The opinions and views expressed on Tree Huggers International do not necessarily reflect the opinions and views of the staff and management of FM 94.9 or Lincoln Financial Media. And as producer, I am solely responsible for this program's content. Questions, complaints, concerns, compliments, we'd love to hear from you. The email is tommy@fm949sd.com. And for more information on Tree Huggers International and to hear previous editions of the show, you can go to the Tree Huggers International page at the FM 94.9 website, which is back at its old URL, www.fm949sd.com/treehuggers. FM949SD.com/treehuggers, or just find the Tree Huggers International logo at the FM949 website. Click on it and it'll take you over there. This is Tommy Howe for Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM949. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 5:30 with another take on natural science and environmental affairs in our corner of Southern California. But in the meantime, get ready for another edition of Nina Blackwood's New Wave Nation. It's on the way next on FM 94.9. Have a great Sunday and a good week. Be well.